If I lose, it's minus one, right? Otherwise, it's zero. So.
Yeah, but that's how do we get the Clausius difference for minus times zero?
What do you mean? How do you get
that? Yeah, because the vacuum of upper is only one thing. So you ever assign either.
No. Okay. It doesn't have to be plus or minus. It can be any value. But that was just an example.
But then you have to define games, and then have to define this.
No. So that was one. It doesn't have. Sorry, it's the exact. It just have to be equal and not
positive. Okay, so it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be plus or minus. Oh yeah. Okay, sorry. But so it doesn't. But of course, right? Yeah, because just as long as it's equal and not positive, that's what it is.
Ready? Oh yeah. Oh no. Could sue. You could sue. Alright, shall we start? Ready? Before I start, you know, this is a just so this is where I'd rather be today, right? and basically, where is it? And drinking this. Where? Ah, it's there. There you go. You can't see it very well. This is from Mauritius, where I'm from originally. And it's 31 degrees over there today. So very nice to be here. So. Eh? Minus? Minus? Minus 30? No. So it's actually warm here for you. Yeah? Yeah. It's all relative. Minus 30 to 30, that's 60 degrees in between. All right. Let's start. What can we do? We have to go through this. So I'm going to try and finish this bit about our consistency that we had from Tuesday. So if you remember, I don't know if you do, we were looking at the notion of constraint satisfaction, and we looked at the notion of forward checking to try and tell us, right, so we saw a backtracking algorithm, and what we have is this notion of heuristics that enable us to basically make the relatively big problems can become more tractable, right? And we were looking at one other thing, which were these inferences, right, that can fit. Well, might as well. Wow. Like 5 minutes to get to this. So we were looking at this bit where we can do some inferences. So we already have this heuristic. So we have the one heuristic that helps us, the minimum remaining value, M of the heuristics, to help decide which variable to choose. And then there's another one, which is the which is this one. The least constraining value one, which enables you to decide, you know, enables us to decide which order to arrange the values of the variable to assign to the variable we've chosen, right? But also we have this notion that we can try and do some inference to try and see whether, you know, when we're assigning, we can sort of do a look ahead and try and see whether we can fail early. So for this, we looked at forward checking as one way of doing this. But then, you know, it's easy to show that, you know, it's good, but it's not as good as it could be. And this is where we were. What we want to do is to basically use this notion of constraint propagation so that we can repeatedly enforce the constraints locally and hopefully be able to say, okay, if I assign this value, I will reach a point, you know, if I look forward, if I do this constraint propagation, it may tell me that there will be a variable that will end up with no values left for it, and I can fail early and say this is not a value I want to assign to the current variable. Okay? So we have this notion of an arc, right? So, and we say that an arc is consistent if and only for every remaining value of x in the domain x of x, there is some value which is allowed in the domain of y. So if I have an arc from there, from South Australia to New South Wales, and so in this particular situation, we made Western Australia red and we made Queensland green, right? And we say, okay, based on this, we can only have the color blue left as something that we can assign to South Australia, and only blue can be assigned to New South Wales. New South Wales can take two colors, sorry. So what we want to do is to do this arc consistency test between this, for instance, and that one, right? So the reason we're doing this right now is because, in the previous slide, we're at this particular stage, and we assigned the value green to Queensland, and that ruled out a value from South Australia. So we want to check it against others, right? So what happens now, we say, okay, let's do this. If I do this and I check how things are going with respect to this, is the arc consistent? Well, it is, right? Because this can only be blue, but it is because there is a value which is red that I can pick for New South Wales, right? So it's consistent, so I don't have to do anything. But what about the other way around, right? If I look at this, and okay, so what do I do? What can happen in this case? Well, if I pick red, things are fine, but blue was also a choice for New South Wales. But if this were ever chosen, right, if you choose blue for this, this is not going to be good. It's not going to be consistent with respect to South Australia, right? So this means we can rule out blue, we can cross it out as a possible value for this particular region. Yeah, I forgot to change the battery in this thing. Yeah. So if we remove the value for this one, what we need to do, right, we need to apply this thing. We need to keep going. We need to keep propagating constraints. So if a particular variable loses a value, the neighbors of X need to be rechecked because this can propagate and has kind of a knock-on effect, right? So we lost a value for New South Wales. Well, it's there, and Victoria is one of its neighbors. So let's see whether the arc from Victoria to New South Wales is itself consistent. Well, if we pick blue, it is. We can have red there. If we pick green, red is there. But if we pick red for this, well, it's a problem. If red is chosen as a value for Victoria, it's going to be inconsistent. So this means we can delete red for Victoria, right? And we can keep going because So we've deleted a value now for Victoria, right? So we can look at the neighbor, and South Australia we know is also a neighbor of Victoria. So what happens to this? Well, we can check this against its own neighbors, right? And we see that if we check it against Northern Territory, so it's its neighbor there, if this has to be blue, then this one cannot be blue, right? So this ends up, so we end up having to cross out this value for South Australia there. And once we do this, right, this is it. There are no values left. We cannot assign any particular color to South Australia. This means we have to fail. So all this started because we decided to assign the value green to Queensland, right? And then we did the check and propagated the check to see whether if we did the whole notion of arc consistency and going forward, whether there would be any colors left for all of the other regions, all of the other variables, right? So what our consistency does, it detects failure earlier than forward checking, right? Because it does more, right? This propagation. So, I mean, it can be run as a preprocessor or, you know, after each assignment. And in the algorithm, we actually do it as after each assignment. Okay? All right. Any questions? Okay, so if you're happy with your idea, the algorithm is like this. It looks complicated, but really it isn't, right? So it's called AC-free. Because, yeah, it's called AC-free because it was the third version. It's not like the free means anything. It's like it just was the third version of this arc consistency algorithm. And that's the one that's, you know, improved. There were several versions before, one and two. Well, several, one and two, and this was an improvement. And that's the one that's pretty well known. Of course, there have been other modifications. But we can look at this. So it takes a CSP problem, and it returns false if there's an inconsistency, right, if it's found it, right, and true otherwise, right? So you give it the CSP, and it's a binary CSP, so it's for binary problems. So you're only going to have arcs between two variables, that's all, right? And the local variable is just going to be a queue of arcs that's initially empty. Well, no, initially, so all the arcs in the CSP. Obviously, you have to start with something, right? So what do you do? While you have something in the queue of arcs to check, right, you remove the first one, right? And then what? Check whether you're going to revise this particular arc with respect to the two variables that are in there, right? Okay? If there is a revision of some kind, so basically you're trying to make the arc xi consistent, arc consistent with respect to xj, right? If you do this, then you check. You need to check whether you've deleted any value from the domain for I, right? If it happens to be that the size of the domain for I is zero, well, that's it. You fail, right? You return false, right? Basically, it's inconsistent. This value is not good, right? So this, you might, so you have to look back at the backtracking algorithm. This means there's going to be a way of not adding that particular color for that variable, right? So if you remember. So the arc consistency, it's itself part of a bigger algorithm, right? The backtracking search that we have. I went to previously and we saw last time. And for each xk, so now what you do, you're going to check all the nodes that are neighbors of xi. Right, all the xk's that are its neighbors, except for xj, because you've just done that, right? So what do? You're going to add all those that have an arc. So you're going to add all the arcs that you have with the neighbors. Yep.
Does this only work with binary
CSPs? Yep. Okay. Binary CSP only. Yeah. But, so it's only for binary CSP. So what do? You add all the arcs to the queue, so since revision occurred, and add all the neighbors of xi for consideration. Or reconsideration, because there could be more than once there, because you may already be in there, right? So if it's already in there, you don't necessarily have to add it again, right? And you keep going, and you know if you never hit this, and eventually you return true. And what does revision do? Well, revision is just going to see, okay, it's just a boolean that's going to be set. Well, it's going and do some deletion. So what does it do? It returns true if and only if we revise the domain for a particular variable, right? So initially nothing's happened. So what do? Now you go through the domain values that are available for a particular variable xi, right? If no value, so this is the one where you're looking for a value for it, right? If no value y in the domain of xj, so dj, allows xy to satisfy the constraint between the two variables, then you delete x from di. So that was like, you know, they can't both be blue, for instance. You delete blue from the domain of xi, so one of them, right? So, and then you set revise to true, and you return revise eventually, right? So it's easy. So this is what it does. This does the work of deleting, and then you go there, you check. If it's nothing left, you just basically say, well, I couldn't find something, so you return false. Otherwise, if you never found any problem, so you did all the constraint propagation, and every particular variables that you had that you have left that are not assigned can at least be assigned one value, you keep going in the outer loop of the backtracking search, right? Questions? No? So the time complexity is this, OCD cube, I can't remember why, but where D is the maximum size of each domain and C is number of binary constraints, arcs. Don't worry, I won't be asking you about this, it's just for information. So just to summarize, so there's a special kind of problem. You're going to be sick of it by the end of the assignment anyway. So CSPs, the states are defined by value of a fixed set of variables. And the goal test is defined by constraints on the variable values. You want to make sure that the constraints are always satisfied, right? And you have backtracking, so depth-first search with one variable assigned per node. That's good enough, right? And you have variable ordering and so You have variable ordering, so basically it tells you which variable you're going to pick at any particular point. Hopefully you pick the one that's going to help you the most, right? And the value selection, so you pick your Sheldon each time, right? For if you remember Big Bang Theory, if you've seen that, right? And then the value selection heuristics helps you once you found a variable, it helps you to decide which value you should pick for it, right? And the forward checking prevents assignments that guarantee later failure. But it's good, it enables you to do it, but it's not as good as, you know, having the constraint propagation that enables you to look even further forward. And for instance, through our consistency, that does more work to constrain the values and detect inconsistencies, right? So you can do, which is interesting, so you could always do this with just these, right? What these do is to enable you to try and finish even earlier, right? So you could not have any of this inference. It would still work, right? But except it would take longer. Questions? Are you happy with this? Right, hopefully, you know, even if you're not, you will be, because if you look at the assignment, like I said, this is what basically you're going to have to do. And you've been given, actually, it'd be nice, because you've been given the backtracking algorithm already implemented in Haskell. Anybody started on the assignment? Probably some people have started, that's what I heard. There you go. You started too. Yes. Stand up so that everybody knows who to slap after that, so that they know who you are after the lecture. Yeah. Good. So how's it going? Easier than you thought. Another reason to beat him up. I'm joking. That's good. So where are you? Which part are you now? All right. That's pretty good. Right, you guys should start too, right? Joking apart. He's doing the right thing. Of course, the first lecture is only next Tuesday. But now that we've gone through this, you're ready. All right, let's move on to today's lecture then. Oops, where is it? Oops, oh, here it is. Right, ready? Let's try and finish this. So what we're going to look at today, we're going to look at this notion of informed search. So we looked at uninformed search before, right? So depth-first search, breadth-first search, and iterative deepening and all these kind of things. So today, this is from Russell and Novick, 3.5, 3.6, right? And no, we're going backwards. This then we're guaranteed to finish, right? No, we're not. Yeah, if we keep going backwards, we can only hit the cover, the front cover. No, so it's just the ordering you can do some of this stuff. Because the reason for instance, you don't need to know much about, I shouldn't say that. Yeah, we're going backwards right now. We'll go forward again. There's no logic to this course. Oh, no, sorry, there is. Wrong thing to say. There's plenty of logic to this course, and that's why you hate it. So anyway, okay, so we're going to look at best first search, and greedy best first search, A star search, and notion of heuristics and admissibility, and there's even some proof on some of the slides, just to make you happy. So heard about A star search or looked at it? When was that, last year? Which coursework?
The coursework that we're
having. You're also looking at the... All right, but you haven't looked at it. All right.
The Stanford Intro to AI course.
All right. Wow, this might... It's okay. I'm not offended that you're going elsewhere to find out more about AI. they have good lecture notes. So you should read. You should go elsewhere as well. Yes, so you've already seen all this then? Okay. Right. Okay, so we're going to just quickly review tree search. So as you know, so what's the difference? What's the difference between tree search and graph search?
Graphs have loops.
Yeah, no, but yeah, what's the difference between the algorithms though?
Only because they can count
that they have loops. Yeah, that's a very generic answer. You have to take into account that they do have loops, yes. And then what do? You check whether you've seen something already and you prune, right? So you have a notion of an explored set. So anyway, good, yeah. Just to remind you, so the tree search algorithm works like this, right? So you're going to have a notion of a frontier which you initialize with the initial state, and then you're just going to say, okay, if it's empty, return failure. Otherwise, choose a leaf node, remove it from the frontier, and then you check whether it's got a goal state. And if it is, you return the corresponding solution, right? Or else you expand the chosen node and you add its children to the frontier, right? They become the candidates for next. So a search strategy is actually defined by picking the order of node expansion from the frontier. We saw that already, because depending on the order in which you pick the nodes from the frontier for exploration, you get depth-first search or you get breadth-first search, right? So that's what makes a difference. Is, you know, the tree search algorithm, this is the one that makes a difference for between these two, for instance. But now we're going to look at other ways of doing this, right? So what is best-first search? So what we're going to have to do now is to see, okay, you know, like before we use a data structure, like the stack or a queue determining which type of algorithm we have, now we're going to have something which is more general. So it's an instance of general tree search or graph search, so it can be an instance of either, right? But the idea now is that you're going to have some kind of evaluation function that you're going to apply to each particular node to give it a value, right? So this gives an estimate of the desirability of that particular node, right? Or, you know, or how cheap it is to use this node, right? So what you do is you expand the most desirable and expanded node, usually the node with the lowest evaluation. So usually it goes, it's like, this one doesn't cost me that much, I want to pick that one. It goes for saying, you know, which one is less costly, and that's the one I pick next, right? So this is the idea. We have notion of an evaluation function, fn, and we're going to look at how this can be actually implemented, right? So in terms of the algorithm implementation itself, the nodes are now going to be ordered in order of decreasing desirability, right? So you use this function that you have there, this evaluation function f of n, and this is going to be used to order the nodes in your queue, right? To order the nodes, basically, right? So what this means concretely, if you were to be implementing this, what does it mean? You know, I'm there, I've got this, they've got different values. Let's assume I want to do it so that I always pick the first one in the list as the next candidate. Then what is one of the things you would have to implement? Sort. Yeah, some kind of sort. Well, you have to, if you keep it sorted, it's nice already. But it means you have to search for it to find where to put the node in there. Exactly, you have to have a sorted list of some kind. So you would need to do a search through there. So this means you even there have a choice in terms of the data structure that you have, right? Maybe it's better to use a tree as opposed to a list, for instance. So there are all sorts of things that came, that, you know. So you end up having to search through your list or whatever to decide, okay, I'm going to put the node there if I pick the one which is, if I'm going to assume that the first one is always the one which is has the least value, right? So this is the idea, and we're going to look at two special cases. One's called the greedy best first search, right? So best first search is the general name. There's one which is the greedy best first search, and the other one is A star search. They're just special cases of best first search. Right. Go back to our map. If you remember, we had this from before, right? We're here. We're in Arad. We want to get to Bucharest, right? And what we have now, we have some additional information about it, right? Well, we're listing them there. So these are the straight line distances that we have between the various cities. To Bucharest, from one city to a particular to Bucharest gives us the straight line distance. You know, we're just using a ruler, right? So from Bucharest to itself, from Arad to Bucharest, there's 360. And this is odd. Yeah, and Bucharest to itself, of course, is zero, etc., right? This is slightly. Is that slightly not straight? Yeah, it's better on this side. So Arad to Bucharest is 360. Bucharest to itself is zero. Craiova, 160, etc., right? So we're going to be using this. So the straight line distance is going to help us to have a heuristic, right? So what is greedy best first search? Well, it's easy. So your evaluation function in this case is just going to be equal to some heuristic function, right? You have some heuristic function. You're just going to say that gives you an estimate, basically, of the cheapest path from the state that you're at this particular node, n, to a goal state. So I'm there. Gives me an estimate from here to somewhere else, for instance, to going to the door there, right? And then this could be my heuristic for trying to get out of the building, right? So the straight line distance from N to Bucharest, for instance. That's just an example, right? So when we're looking at the map there, right? So the thing to remember in this case is that the evaluation function is just going to be the heuristic function. So greedy best first search expands the node that appears to be closest to the goal, right? It should be obvious, right? So, for instance, if we take the straight line distance, the fact that, you know, it's, you know, from here to there, you know, from one city to another is 50, it says it's like 50 miles, and from that one to this other one, it says that 60 miles. It doesn't mean in real life that, you know, if you had to go from there to there, that this one is actually closer, right? Because the road could be going like this, like this, like this to this one, whereas the other one just goes like that, right? And in the end, the distance of the travel is actually less to go for the one that looked further away on the map, right? And I don't know if you do this, right? Whenever I've often made that kind of mistake, I have to go from one place to another in the country here, and you tend to say, ah, look at this. This bit there is not very far, right? It doesn't look very far. That going from there to there, but then I neglect the fact that to go from here to this, I actually have to go for a city, right, which is going to be very slow, right, and etc. So there was this one. If I'm using this time as the measure of which one I would prefer, maybe going by the bypass, or maybe going to this other city there is actually easier because it avoids the whole. Maybe it's easier to go straight to that other city and come down, right? So which is a bit weird, right? And you also see that with airplanes, right? If you ever fly to America, they don't just go straight. They tend to go there because they save fuel, for instance. The straight line, even though it looks closer, but the way they go is like this. So it depends on what they have as their, what is it the cost for them? What is the cost function? What is it they need to do, right? So this is the idea for greedy best first search. So if we apply it to our graph, what happens, right? Or to our particular problem? We're here, we're in Arad. What it says that the straight line distance for this, so we have to start with that, right? It's 360, okay. We look at these various children. So this one is Sibiu. Is this one Timisoara? Right? Is that right? Not quite? It's okay. All right. And this one is Zerin. Yeah, see this one I can do. So this tells me then, okay, it says this is the distance, the straight line distance to Bucharest is 253 there, 329 there, and 374. So what the greedy best first search algorithm is going to do is, of course, going to say, okay, let's pick this one because this one appears, it's telling me the straight line distance is, less than the other two. So it picks this one as the candidate for expansion, right? And once it does this, it looks at the children of these various nodes or the various other cities that are there. Well, obviously this, and there's that, there's that, there's that. So it's going to pick this one, Pythagoras, which is 176 miles, or at least that's the distance in straight line, right? So this becomes the next one to expand because it's smaller than all of them. So far so good, actually. It's pretty disciplined. It's just going straight under, right? And in this case, then once it's there, it picks the other ones, and it just happens that this is the child. Bucharest is there. Just from there, you can go to there, right? And it's zero, so you go through this. This is the route that you're going to take to get to Bucharest, okay? Now the question is, right, is this the best way of getting from there? Is this the one that actually, is this the optimal way of getting from Arad to Bucharest? And the answer is, no, it's not, right? And we're going to see we're using best A-star that we can find a different route which is optimal, right? So first of all, is it complete? Well, no. If you're using the tree search, it's definitely not complete. You can get stuck in loops, right? And in graph search, it is complete in finite space because, if the space is finite, you will detect the loop. You will eventually exhaust it. But if you happen to have some problem which has an infinite state space, then even that is not complete, right? Okay, so that's one thing. So tree search is definitely not complete, but graph search's version is complete for finite state space. So if you have like this particular graph that we have for the map, right? So this, if you use graph search, it is complete. You will get to your destination, right? And the time itself is O to the BM for the tree version, right? Where M, what is M? Yeah, it's the maximum depth for the search space.
That's right.
For the tree version. But if you have a good heuristic, this can be much better, obviously. You don't have to go all the way to find it. If your heuristic is really terrible, you may have to exhaust the tree, right? Go all the way and do everything. And the space itself is O to the BM. So because you have to keep all the nodes in memory, right? Because when you're doing this, it could be that it just happens in this case, you're going straight up, but it could be that you have to jump to there and expand this one. Oh, so one thing to remember, right? So these are all offline searches, right, we're doing. So meaning you're sort of simulating, it's not like you're actually going there and then deciding what you do. You're doing this on, it's an algorithm that's going to give you the route and give you a plan for it, right? Any questions? So easy? Sure? Good. All right, so that's all there is to it for when it comes to best first search, right? You just have to come up with a heuristic. Hopefully it's a good one. We'll see what are the notions of a good heuristic. And then you just make your evaluation function the heuristic. That's all very good, but, you know, it's neglecting something, right? And this is what A star is going to try and take into account, right? It could be that, given that the fact that it's greedy, so it's only looking and saying, well, if I go there, this one looks more promising, this one looks more promising. But it's completely neglecting how much it had to, you know, how much effort or how much was the cost to get to a particular node. It just goes to the one that looks more promising, right? What we want to do in A star search is to avoid expanding paths that are already expensive, right? So what do? So we bring in some history. You bring in the history of how much it costs you so far to get to a particular node. And that's what it does. So the evaluation function changes in this case. Still some fn, and you have a particular bit there, that let's call it gn, and we still have the heuristic part. So gn is going to be the cost so far to reach a particular node. So you take into account how much it was to get there. And hn is still going to be the estimated cost to get from that node to the goal, right? So now what fn becomes, it becomes the estimated total cost of path through n to the goal, right? How much did it cost me to get to there? How much do I think it will cost me to get to the goal from there, right? So you take into account the history of getting to this particular node n, right? And the nice thing is that A star improves over the greedy best first search in the sense that it's both complete and optimal if hn is going to satisfy a number of conditions. There are particular conditions. We're going to look at this. If we can guarantee that these conditions hold for the heuristic function, then we know that A star search is going to be complete. But not only that, it's also going to be optimal.
What's the difference to Dijkstra's
algorithm? How do you mean? Shortest path algorithm.
Yeah.
What's the difference to
this transformation?
Eh?
Is it this exactly the same thing?
Is it exactly the same thing? No. Why is it exactly the same thing? Is Dijkstra's algorithm an instance of A star search? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, they are. Okay, let's see. Here we are. You tell me, I'll ask you again. It's the same. Right, so here we are, we're in Arad there. So what we do is that we say, okay, from Arad, the cost so far, because I'm starting there, I've not paid anything, so it's zero to get there, because that's where you're starting. And the estimate is 366 to get to Bucharest. So same as before here, right? But now the interesting thing is, okay, we look at the cost now. So it costs, what do we have? To get to Sibiu from there is 140, right? And it's still 253, the estimate to get to the goal, right? And we do this for the other two nodes which are like connected to Arad, right? So this one is 447, this one is 449. So nothing's really changed from before. This one is still the cheapest one, so we pick that one as the candidate for expansion, right? Now it becomes interesting. So before, when we were there, right, so we expand. Okay, let's expand. We do all of this. So we find that actually going back is 646. Pythagoras is 415. What's this one? Is that an R? What is this one called? Orade. Orade. There you go, Orade. That's 671. And this one? I can't say that. Rimnu?
Rimniku?
Vecha. Oh, Rimniku Vecha. There you go. So this one is 413. Yeah. See, so I think Russell and Novik, I think they explained somewhere on their website why they chose it, because I think one of them was on holiday. That's why they found it interesting to put this in the book. I wonder how the Americans deal with this. Yeah. Anyway, but before, right, if you look at the previous example, that was the one that took more, that was the candidate for expansion. But in this case, it's now different. It says, okay, which one is the one that costs less, right? Taking into account how much it cost me to get there. Now we go to this particular one, right? So before, what did we expand? We did expand that one, right? Yeah, exactly. So now this one is different. So it picks a different candidate to expand. And it says, okay, let's do this. And we look at its children. And now that's interesting. So that's 536. This one is 417. This one is 553. But this one is 415, so now we go there, right? Because it actually turns out that this one is cheapest, but at least at this particular point, right? So it jumps back there, does this, and now it does this. It says, oh, this one is 591, but Bucharest itself, even though it's there, right? So that's the interesting thing. Bucharest is a child there, but it's saying it's going to be 450 to go to the goal. There's one which is 417 there, right? So actually, you say, okay, this is the one that's the child for expansion, even though the goal is there, just underneath as a child node, right? So it picks this one, and now it says, okay, let's do this. So that's 418, 615, 607, and that's the cheapest one, and that's the goal, right? So it's interesting the way it worked, right? It's quite different. So whereas before we went like this, this time, you know, the path, even though you've explored all these nodes, right? You've done this, you actually explored that one, but decided this is not going to be on your goal in the final one. The actual goal that will be written is this one. The actual path that will be written is this one, right? That's the solution, right? So in the exams, sometimes people get confused when they've been given a problem like this and they've been asked, what are the nodes that are actually explored? And for some reason, people sometimes often just give this one, right? They give the final route or the final solution that you know, they give the actual solution to get to the goal. But what is being asked is that in this case, it's like if you're asked to give the order in which the nodes are explored, you're actually doing this, this, and then you do this, and then you jump there, and then you go there, and then you go there, right? So people forget about that as well, that this node has also been looked at, right? Questions? You all happy with this? And the temptation is also, because we're so used to like depth first search, you're in the exam, you do this, you say, oh, here it is, that's the solution, but it's not, right? There's no look ahead, so that's slightly different. So if you remember the version of breadth first that we had, right? It looks at a node and it checks whether one of the child nodes is actually is the goal, right? But this one you don't do that, obviously. Because if you did this, you would have picked that one. You need to go, whereas this one is the correct one. Okay? So, it's all very nice. Now what we move to is like a bit of proof, because we want to see what are these actual conditions I was mentioning there. Right? So, when do we have this optimality? Well, for this we need to introduce a few things. So, a heuristic HN is said to be admissible, right? So it's a notion of admissibility, right? If for every node n, right, so you know to which I apply it, the cost that it returns, the estimated cost that it returns, is actually less than or equal than the h star n, where h star n is the true cost to reach the goal state from n. Okay, so it's a very simple idea. So for instance, the straight line distance itself is going to be an admissible heuristic, right? Because going from A to B is going to be less than the straight line distance, right? Now I'm going to get this right. So an admissible heuristic basically never overestimates the cost to reach the goal. Basically, it's optimistic, right? The straight line distance for the map is as short as it can get, right? At least on a plane, right? So thus, what we have is that Fn gn is equal to gn plus hn. The total itself, given that this one you know is a fixed, is something that you can work out, never overestimates the true cost of a solution. Right? Okay? So when you have an admissible heuristic, the evaluation function that you're going to have is never going to be an overestimation. It's never going to be more than the actual cost, because this one is always going to be less than the actual true cost, right? The heuristic function. Okay? So the heuristic, when you have straight line distance, it never overestimates the actual road distance. Happy with this? And the theorem is, if Hn is admissible, right, if this holds, so if you're asked, define the notion of admissibility for a heuristic function, this is what you're being asked to give, right? It's really easy. It's just less than or equal than the true cost, right, the cost that it returns. And the theorem is Hn is admissible, right? If it is admissible, A star using tree search is optimal, right? That's one theorem there. And just to annoy you, we're going to see why it's like this, right? We're going to just do a proof by contradiction, actually. We're going to show that we're not going to expand a particular thing that's suboptimal. So suppose you have some suboptimal goal G2, right, which has been generated and is in the frontier, right? Let's assume it's there. So remember, the frontier means it's a candidate for expansion. It doesn't mean you've expanded it yet, right? And let N, so there's G2, that your frontier is going like this, and let N be an expanded node also in the frontier, such that N, though, is on the shortest path to some optimal goal G, right? So this is your frontier, it has these two, right? In a way, it's like this. It's this one. This is what we're trying to show. We're trying to show that, you know, if this is my frontier right now, right, with all of these things in there, that, you know, even though this is there, right, I'm not going to do that step because it's suboptimal compared to doing this step, right? That's what this is, and we saw it. This is the example that shows that if you have an admissible heuristic, Even though the next, you know, you have this already there as a candidate for expansion, it's not going to pick it. We're just showing mathematically why this is the case. And it's really not that complicated. It's just a little bit of algebra, right? So what do we know? So we know that these are both goals, right? So what do we know when we've reached the goal? We know that when we've reached the goal, the cost, right? So the evaluation function applied to G2 is just going to be G of G2, right? It's the actual cost, because we can work that out, right? So you remember what these are. So G gives you the cost to get to a particular node, and H gives you the estimate to go from a particular node to the goal. So if we're there, at this particular point, F of G2 is equal to G of G2, since the estimated, since the heuristic is going to return zero there, right? Because you're already at the goal. Happy with this? So, but what do we also know? We also know that G of G2 is greater than G of G, right? Because we said that it's suboptimal, right? So the cost of getting to G2, the true cost, is actually going to be greater than the cost of getting to G. Happy with this? So we have this. And also we know that this, F of G, is equal to G of G. It's similar argument to this one, since once you're at the goal, the estimated cost to get to the goal is zero, right? And of course, if we have these together, what we can do is that we can say that F of G2 is going to be greater than F of G, right? Because we're just using this one and we're just substituting for this there, right? So far, so good? Okay. So we have F of G2 is greater than F of G, right? So that's where we are. But we also have this one. We know that H is admissible, right? So this means that Hn is going to be less than or equal to H star of n for any n, since H is admissible, right? If we have this, we can add Gn on both sides to this, right? We end up with Gn plus Hn less than or equal Gn plus H star of n, right? But what is Gn plus Hn? That's Fn, right, by definition. And this one, Gn plus H star of n. So this is telling you this is Gn, right, the cost of getting to there, and H star of n is the true cost of getting to G. It has to be equal to Fg, right? Because once you're at Fg, you know exactly how much it costs you to get there, right? So we have that basically that Fn is less than or equal to Fg. We're doing all this, right, even though it's pretty boring for you, I'm sure. So what do we have? We take this one and we take that one. We end up with Fg2 is greater than Fn, right? You happy with this? So these two together give us this, right? But we know that A star will always pick, you know, the node that has the smallest value. Remember, you've ordered the frontier according to the lowest value first. So this means it's never going to pick this one as the next candidate. It's always going to pick N, right? Any N that's smaller, right? That's not, that, you know, because this is suboptimal, it's not going to pick this one to expand. So this means A star will never select G2 for expansion. It will always pick this one first, if it's on the path to an optimal goal. Happy with this? Any questions? So this is it's not a very complicated proof. I have asked this in the exam in the past. And I think out of like maybe 80 people, maybe 5 got it. I don't know why. Because I don't know, because you guys don't like proofs, or maybe you think there won't be any proof. But if you do the past exam papers, you'll see that it has been asked. Mm-hmm. This one? Yeah.
Shouldn't that read greater or equal than?
No, because this is greater than this, right? And this one is greater or equal. Greater, okay. It has to be greater, which is great, because you're definitely going to pick that one. Yeah. Any questions?
Mine's
called A star. Oh, actually. What is it called? I knew that at one point, I'm sure. What is it called, A star?
The first argument.
Is that why?
No, I'm just asking why, because they are just adding heuristically.
I don't know. I should know this. I'm sure I knew at some point. Yeah, I can check. Do you know why it's called A star? Why is it called A star? You looked at the slides from Stanford. Why is it called A star? They didn't say. But then, they may have. I don't know. Russell and Novick. If Russell and Novick doesn't say, well, of course there's Wikipedia. I don't know why it's called A star. But there probably was one. Maybe there was an algorithm called A first, and then they say, oh well, we can have A star. It's better than A, right? I don't know. I'm just making this up. Okay, so this is important, right? So do you understand the idea what's going on here, right? We're doing all this just to say, so this is just a proof of this. It's just a way of justifying why we can have this theorem that it's going to be, A star is going to be optimal for tree search, right? Okay, but this is all very good, but remember, what if we have a graph? There's admissibility doesn't work that well then. If we have a graph, then things are slightly different. We need to have a different notion, right? So we need to introduce the notion of a consistent heuristic, right? The heuristic is consistent if for every node n, right? Again, some node n, every successor n prime of n generated by any action A is going to satisfy this particular inequality there. What does this say? This says that, you know, the estimated cost to the goal from n is going to be less than the cost of expanding, the actual cost, so that's a step, it's a step cost going from n doing action A to n prime. So we actually saw this before, right? Plus the estimated cost from n prime. So what it does, it says, you know, I'm here, I'm at this node there, right? Well, it's there. This means that this is going to be less than going the estimate from going from n to the goal is going to be less than or equal to the doing this step, which I know the cost, plus the estimate to there. It's a form of a triangle inequality, right? Okay? So I do the step, but then it's going to be, you know, plus this. Happy with this? It is a form, it's like the hypotenuse. It's just reverse. Yeah, it's not quite. I should be careful. It is a form of a triangle inequality, but not in that way. So, okay, so what do we have then? If H is consistent, we can do a little bit of algebra again there. We have that F of n prime is equal to gn prime plus hn prime. So we know this already. This is by definition, right? Well, what does this mean if we're talking about this? We can say, well, this is equal to gn, right? So the cost of getting to the parent of n prime plus the cost of getting from n to n prime by action A, right? Right, you're happy with this? So the cost of getting from to there, the actual cost is going to be the cost of getting to there plus this bit, right? And plus h prime n, right? Yeah. And this is going to be greater or equal to gn plus hn. Why is that? Where do I get this from? How do I turn this equality to an inequality? Easy. Yeah, exactly, because you've been given this, right? So you've been told that hn itself is going to be less than or equal to this. So if I plug hn there, you can do just a little bit of algebra, you'll see that fn of n prime has to be greater or equal to this, right? It's equal if this just happens to be equal to that. Otherwise, if it's less, it has to be greater than this, right? But what does this mean? This means that fn prime is going to be greater than or equal to fn, right? Okay? So meaning that fn itself is non-decreasing along any particular path. So if you have a consistent heuristic, this means the value of the total cost, estimated cost, is going to be non-decreasing. They could be equal, but it's going to be non-decreasing. It can never increase, right, if the heuristic is consistent, right? So then what you can say is that it means that if hn is consistent, A star search using graph search is going to be optimal because I'm always going to pick something which is either, you know, I pick the value, it's 10. Whatever I pick next can be is not going to be smaller than 10, right? I can't find a value that is smaller after this, right? So I'm always going to be picking the one which is at most the best, right? There could be 10 of them at the same value, but I will pick one of the best. And the next step, I will pick something else which will be could be equal, as the, you know, same as the previous time, but not better, right? And what this means, if you look at it like this, is that when we're doing sort of kind of graph search like this, if we have this like that, right? What happens is that this idea of consistent heuristics gives you an idea that you're expanding, like you have a contour, and you do it like this, and you say, okay, let's take these that are within that contour. So there could be more than one node within a particular contour, right? But they're both equally good, right, if it's a graph search. Well, you know, they're equally good in that sense. You're not going to pick anything less, right? So A star search expands nodes in order of increasing F value. We know that, right? So what this really does is have this idea of this contour map around, right, starting from there, for instance, right? And the contour I has all the nodes with f equal to fi, where fi is going to be less than fi plus 1, so the next one that you pick, right? So everything that's within is going to be within that particular contour, and you just expand it like this, just to show one particular way of doing it, right? You happy with this general idea? So within the contour, you can have more than one choice, right? But you will pick the one that you want. It will give you the most, because it's consistent, it will give you the optimal solution. If this is not too clear, you should read a little bit more about it in Russell and Norvig. So this is one slide trying to summarize what's going on in, like, I can't remember, at least one page, I think. So you should have a look at this. Any questions? No? Okay, we're not done yet. So what do we have? Then if we have this, right, if, is there still complete? Yes, unless there are infinitely many nodes with f less than or equal to fg. So it's going to be complete for tree search. We know this if the heuristic is admissible. And it's also complete for graph search if it's consistent. So you need something slightly stronger. Time is still exponential. And it keeps all the nodes in memory again because you can jump all over the place, so you need to keep them. And it is going to be, so it's complete, it will find a solution, and it is optimal, right? Okay, so just to give you a little bit more about this, if you have this particular problem we saw before, right, this is our 8 puzzle, right? So what are possible heuristics for this one? Remember, we want to, you know, we view it as we're moving the blank, we want to go from this start state to this as a goal state, right? So one particular heuristic could be, it's the number of misplaced tiles, right? So, you know, if you look at this, this is the start state, and this is where you want to go. You just count how many of the tiles are not in the right position to start with. I think it's all of them, is it? Yeah. So that's easy. So that's all of them. So it's basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, right? And the other one could be the total Manhattan distance. You know about Manhattan distance? No? Manhattan distance basically is just a way of saying, okay, you know, what is the, so this is the position from there. It's like going around buildings. So it's saying, you know, the Manhattan distance from getting from this from there to this position is 1, 2, 3, right? It's just like, how do you go there? Like, and what's the Manhattan distance for 6 to get it to this position to there? It's like 1, 2, 3 as well, right? And what is 2 from there to this position is just 1, right? So that's the Manhattan distance, how you go around to get to a particular position, right? Around obstacles and everything. So we could use as the heuristic for this one is the total Manhattan distance. So it's the number of squares from desired location. So we add all of them. So we count, like, for 1, it's, like I said, 1, 2, 3. And then for 2, it's 1. So we just add the whole total each time, right? Okay? So these would give us two particular heuristics there in terms of deciding how we're going to, which move we're going to pick next, right? So the question is, you know, how do these two relate? Well, we have this idea of dominance. So we have two heuristics, right? They're not both going to be equally good. What we have is this idea. If h2n is greater or equal to hn for all n, right, and both of these are admissible, so it's actually easy to see that both of these heuristics are going to be admissible, actually. They're going to be less than or equal to the true cost. If both of them are actually admissible, we say that an h2, though, is always greater or equal to hn. We say that h2 dominates hn, right? And h2 is going to be better for search. And you can actually work this out as well by doing a similar kind of reasoning that we had before to show that depending on which one you have, if you had both heuristics. Yeah. So actually, if you look at the past exam question from 2 years ago, maybe, I don't know, you'll see there is a question about this. And it talks about, you know, if you had two heuristics, how would you combine them? Yeah, that was being a bit naughty. How do you combine the two heuristics so that you actually always ensure that you're doing the right, they're admissible. It's always admissible. And you have two admissible heuristics. How do you combine them so that you can get something that's going to be better than the two of them? How do you do that if you have two heuristics? And they can change. You can't tell that one is greater than the other. So you can't just tell that this one dominates it. So how do you ensure that you get one heuristic out of the two that's going to be still admissible but better than both of them taken individually? It's really easy. Think about it. You want an admissible heuristic out of two heuristics, but it always picks the one that's greater. Always pick the one that's higher. Exactly. You just do the max of the two at any particular node, and that was the solution. So because then you will get a heuristic that's better. At least that's always going to be better than either of them, right? If you don't know if the heuristics both vary like this, so you just take the maximum value, you get a new heuristic, it is guaranteed to be admissible because both of the ones you started were admissible, but it's going to dominate both of them, right? No, but the sum may not be admissible anymore. You see, that's the thing. The admissible means it has to be less than the true cost. If you take the sum, maybe you will go above the true cost. But by taking the max, you'll show that it is still admissible, right? Yeah, maybe I should, it's okay. I can't use this as an exam question. Anyway, so the typical search cost, right, then is this. This is just to give you some idea about what's going on if you use these heuristics. If D is 12 and there, so iterative depth, iterative deepening search is going to look at 3 million over almost 3.5, more than 3.5.